You see here, there's a heavy dose of the near fulfillment in Luke's prophecy given in the temple. A heavy dose. He says, there are great earthquakes in diverse places and famines and pestilences. Those things also, these are like the beginning of sorrows. They're not the definite signs of the end. There shall be fearful sights and great signs shall there be from heaven. Now, there are some great signs in the book of Revelation. You know, fire from the sky and mountains burning with fire falling into the sea. Could refer to a meteor strike or something like that. A mountain-sized meteor. How big would that be? How big would make a mountain to you? Well, big enough to destroy a third of the shipping and to kill a third part of the creatures in the sea. A third of the creatures. That's a big kill. There's going to be great signs, fearful sights, things that people are going to see that they're going to fear. But before all this, now, there is a destruction, and the destruction of Jerusalem, it was just a destruction of the Jerusalem. That was a fearful sight, but it was pretty mundane. No fearful signs from the heaven, just the destruction of the people of Jerusalem led away captive. And the fact that this parable is given, I mean, this prophecy is given in context, mingled with definite things that refer to the destruction of Jerusalem, like the Jews being led away captive. If this was written after the fact, it would be shocking that they would include the great signs from heaven and so on and so forth. Because there are no reports of such great signs in the heaven connected with the destruction of Jerusalem. This prophecy from verse 12 about them having, you know, hands laid on them and persecuting, that also goes to the end of the world. At that time, there'll be another time when they will lay hands on the Christians and persecute them. Mother shall betray son to death. Kinsfolk, brethren, friends. Some of them being put to death. Some in prison. Some maybe not caught. And shall turn to us for a testimony. Jesus therefore counsels us to settle it in our hearts. Not to meditate what we're going to answer. Don't worry about your answer. My former teacher used to say that it was a sin to meditate. It was actually not just a sin, but an unpardonable sin. That's so wrong. That's not what the unpardonable sin is. But what Jesus is not trying to terrify us by saying, don't meditate, or you'll be damned, and there'll be no forgiveness. No, what he's saying is, don't worry. Settle in your hearts. It's going to happen, but have faith in God that He'll give you what to say. As I say to people, you know, they want to prepare for the end times. I say, prepare yourself by learning to walk for God now. And when that time comes, it'll be automatic. God's Spirit will help you. You don't think you're a very good speaker. I know I'm not. I have a lot of understanding, but I'm not a good talker. I've got a whole file on my computer of me stumbling over my words just because it makes me laugh. You know, but God will give us a mouth and wisdom which all of our adversaries shall not be able to gainsay or resist. They're not going to be able to answer us, to gainsay. You know, to gainsay is to say again, well, you say that, but I say this. Everyone's going to hate us. Because we're going to represent opposition to everything that they think is good. They're going to think the Antichrist is going to be received to that of them as being God. They're going to believe he is God. Except not every knee is going to bow to this God. There's going to be people, like when Jesus comes, every knee shall bow. But when this guy comes, who is Satan either personified or Satan himself or whatever, however you want to look at it, the whole world's going to be worshiping him. He's going to be performing miracles, and we are going to resist him. And because of our resistance, it's going to cause them a lot of grief, because they're going to think that we are the only thing standing between them and a perfect world. We're the only thing standing between them and the kingdom of God and the forgiveness of all people, or whatever it is he's offering them. And so we will become hated, and some will be killed. But as Jesus says, there shall not an hair of your head perish. Because though we are dead, yet shall we live. Though they slay us, yet will he raise us up. And as it is witnessed in the book of Revelation in the 11th chapter, that when God's witnesses are put to death, after 3.5 days, they are going to rise from the dead, and great fear will fall upon them that sees them. Because they've been rejoicing. They've been making joy over the death of them. Because they hated them so. Because they tormented them so. And we will torment the people of the earth. And when they see us rise, they say, well, what do you think? You're one of the two witnesses? Well, the two witnesses are the two candlesticks. The candlesticks are the churches. Those two men, in my understanding, symbolize the resistance of the whole church. In the prophecy, the two men are like a parable. You know, two men stood against him. The two men represent the faithful church, the true church, through whom the olive oil, the Spirit of God, flows. Because contrary to some, in the end times, the Spirit of God is going to be more active than ever. And he's going to be active especially in the believers. Especially in those who stand in the evil day. And who, having done all, are ready to stand. And to make war against the beast. Not according to carnal war. Not according to flesh and blood weaponry. But according to spiritual weaponry. As spoken of in the prophecies. So shall we do. I don't think it's anything special, in other words, to be one of the two witnesses. It's we are what we all aspire to be as Christians. The two witnesses represent the entirety of Christian aspiration to give a testimony that it should turn for us, that it should turn to us in our generation to give a testimony to God and to suffer for it and to be slain for it. That is the what every Christian's heart longs after, because it is given unto us on behalf of Christ, not only to believe on him, but to suffer for his name's sake. It is the culmination of all Christian aspiration. There's nothing wrong with aspiring to that. And I don't hide the fact, I aspire to it. In our patience, we possess our souls. In patience, what is patience? It's patient endurance in waiting. In not giving up, in clinging tenaciously to that truth, in the face of the whole world in opposition and in hatred, in the face of relatives betraying us to death, friends spitting on you. Are you ready for it? Do you love Christ? You love Jesus, you say. That's what he's called you to be hated by those you love, as he also was hated.